Welcome to the Pin Down, your Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys.
And I'm Blake Silverman, writer for Detroit Bad Boys, covering everything from the Pistons to the NBA draft and the Motor City Cruise.
Right. And as always, guys, if you're listening over podcasts, we appreciate you. Be sure to, like it or give us a good review, something to give us some good feedback or constructive feedback, if that's what you want to give us as well. And if you're watching live, be sure to throw in your questions here in the YouTube chat or in the Twitter chat. Both of those are coming right to us here in the StreamYard platform, which we're recording from. So we will be able to get to all of those. Look, Blake, the Pistons kind of did a flurry of moves and news. We had a few minutes there where everything coming out of Woj and Shams was related to our Detroit Pistons. So, we're not going to touch on all of those moves in too much detail. Honestly, outside of Isaiah Stewart and the one signing to the regular roster that they made, none of them were really of too much significance on their own, but we should list them all out. So Isaiah Stewart was informed that he's going to be suspended for 3 games for the incident involving Drew Eubanks back in Phoenix before the All-Star break. Tosin Iwobuoma, hopefully I said that right.
Iwoma.
Okay. Tosin Iwobuoma, he signed to a 2-way contract. He was with the Pistons on a 10-day previously. Stanley Amudie signed to the active roster for the rest of the season. Buddy Boeheim signed to the other 2-way spot after they released Malcolm Cazelon from his 2-way position as well. So probably the most interesting one here, at least in terms of the roster moves, obviously Isaiah Stewart being suspended for the 3 games is a bit of a bummer, though it's not necessarily unexpected at this point based on what we had all heard leading into this. But Amudie, he gets signed to the active roster. In the 17 games he's played with the main team, he's played pretty well. 5 points per game, almost 2 rebounds. He was slashing 48, 55, 92 from the field, 3 and free throw line respectively. So, just quickly before we talk about that Pacers game that happened Thursday night, what were your thoughts on Amudie, both with the Pistons and with the Cruise? I know you've been able to watch him there. And do you think he might be able to get a little bit of run here as the season winds down?
Yeah. So I think the moves was really just like rewarding. Specifically Amudie and also like a couple players who got 2-ways, like rewarding those guys who have been playing well. We've seen a decent amount of Amudie with the Pistons. I've watched him a decent amount with the Cruise this year, and it's interesting because he's juggling from different roles like really every day, like being a top option for the Cruise and then going to the Pistons and really just like playing his role in the minutes that he can. So I'm happy for him. I think he's played great and definitely deserves an NBA shot. In the G League, he's averaged 17.8 points per game and has shot 37.8 from 3 on 9 attempts per game. So he's just been playing well overall, also close to 6 rebounds a game. So I think he will definitely get some run with the Pistons, to be determined where he fits into the rotation. I just got an update before we hopped on the call that Stanley is going to be assigned to the Cruise right now. So I think that's mainly a travel thing, like getting the guys from where they are to where the team is. But I expect him to be active with the Pistons as soon as their next game Saturday against Orlando. Overall, I think it's well-deserved, and he also addresses a positional need for the Pistons. So I hope they do at least give him that opportunity in this last 25 or so games.
Yeah, absolutely. And, what I really wanted to ask you here with Amudie was, you've watched, like we mentioned, quite a bit of these Cruise games. You cover them. What from his role that he was, achieving for the Cruise and he was excelling in it, what from that role do you think might be able to translate for him with the Pistons here now with this main roster spot? Is it pretty much what we saw early in the season when he was getting a lot of minutes on that 2-way deal due to all the injuries that the team had? Or do you think maybe there's some other things that he was doing in the G League that you might be able to tap into in the NBA?
Yeah, so Stanley and Jared Roden, for that matter, who's also on a 2-way with the Pistons, are really like they were the top options for the Crews scoring wise. And they were the guys who are really just like generating points. Like those are the dudes that you go to get buckets. From Stanley, like I mentioned, he's putting up 9 threes a game and connecting on those at a high volume. So I definitely see that being something he can hang his hat on and something we've already seen with the Pistons. But it, in the G League is like, those games are just so fast, man. Like those guys get out and run. And what I've seen from Stanley is like, he also can like drive and just like do some fakes and get to the bucket. I think it's, of course, a little different in the NBA and it'll probably be like officiated a bit differently, but I think he can make some of those things happen as well. Where I see him primarily making an impact is just like that 3-and-D type role that we've seen in his time with the Pistons. But I do think there are other things that he can do, and he has been working on this season in the G League.
All right, Blake, speaking of fast-paced games, let's talk about that Pacers game that happened on Thursday night. You know, that was, I don't want to necessarily say that was a tale of two halves, because it really wasn't, though the Pistons did play better in the second half. It was probably more accurately a tale of three quarters versus one. The Pistons had a very nice third quarter. Obviously wasn't enough to make up for the, I think, 31-point deficit that it was at one point. So watching that game, what were a couple of takeaways, or maybe just one main takeaway that you saw watching that game that hopefully, you know, maybe they can build on here for the rest of the season, or at a minimum correct, because there's a lot to unpack with that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main takeaway, and maybe really like the only positive one you can take away from that game, is just like Cade was still balling. He was finding a way to get buckets, make plays while, I mean, there wasn't much going on elsewhere. So I think that's something you can build on. We briefly talked about Jaden Ivey just not getting a ton of volume. So I think that's something that can easily correct. And one other thing that stood out to me that I'm hoping is a quick fix, but it seems like we've been talking about it all season with this team, is the turnovers. And specifically, there was a stretch, I think towards the end of the first half, where it just seemed like there were like four or five possessions in a row that ended in a turnover, and Indy quickly got back in transition. And I think a couple of those were from Jalen Duren. So I'm hoping Duren had more turnovers than Cade in that game. Like, I feel like that's just something that you can't have for a guy that ideally doesn't have like the ball in his hands as much as your primary guard. So I'm hoping that's something that can easily be cleaned up. But overall, if we are going to take something beneficial from that game, it really is Cade still finding a way to be effective.
All right, let's talk about the turnovers quickly and then circle back around to Cade, because I think we're starting to see the narrative from early on in the season starting to bleed over when it's not necessarily applying anymore. The Pistons are a really bad team at taking care of the ball. Cade Cunningham is not the problem, all right? If you remove that stretch where he was still getting acclimated early on in the season, he's pretty much averaging what he did against the Pacers, which is just about 8 assists and just about 3 turnovers, a little bit under. And that's from Laz Jackson, friend of the show there, great at DBB. So he's right about where he's been at. He's been doing this for a long time now. He's brought his turnovers back down and under control. The problem is that you're still seeing some of these unacceptable turnovers. So even a guy like Jaden Ivey, while I wish he had the ball in his hands more, 1 turnover against the Pacers. You had, Marcus Sasser, 1 turnover. He's handling the ball a lot too. But Jalen Duren, 4 turnovers. Evan Fournier, who plays 18 minutes, but you could probably count on one hand the number of times he puts the ball on the floor in those 18 minutes. He had a turnover. That's unacceptable. Malachi Flynn, who, yeah, he's handling the ball a lot, but he's your third point guard. 2 turnovers. That's not acceptable either. You've got guys that really don't have much of a ball handling or creation load, turning the ball over repeatedly. And I honestly, quite honestly, a lot of Jalen Duren's especially are of that same lazy variety that had us pulling our hair out early in the season with Cade Cunningham. It's, you know, he's falling asleep on handoffs, getting the ball, you know, lollipop passes across the lane. Like, how much of this is going to be fixable? Because early on in the season, here's why I'm asking you this. Early on in the season, we were on here, we were talking about, okay, Cade Cunningham has the ball in his hands the most. If he brings these turnovers down, this issue probably goes away, because it really was, you know, it was a team issue, but a lot of it was isolated to what he was doing early on in the season. Well, we've seen that go down. We've seen Cade really take care of the ball outside of a few one-game blips here and there over this stretch since early in the winter. So the turnovers haven't gone away. Other people have just kind of picked up the slack, for lack of a better word. Do you think this is something they can rein in before the season ends?
I feel like it has to be through just like who is handling the ball. Like, I know we went through a stretch before the All-Star break where Duren was like trying to work on his handle and like really had the ball in his hands more. So if it's resulting in like four turnovers a game, I think you really just need to rein that back. Like, we've seen the same issue with Isaiah Stewart when he puts the ball on the deck. So I don't know if it's necessarily fixable immediately in terms of those guys limiting their turnovers. If they do try to make things happen, I think it's whether it's Monty Williams or whether it's like Cade and Jaden Ivey, just like making more of a point to keep the ball in their hands until like those guys find their spots and get open, and not like, I guess, relying on them to make things happen. Because like we've been talking about really this whole season, those high usage guys, we're going to expect a decent amount of turnovers from, but your front court that in theory shouldn't be handling the ball or just moving with the ball in their hands too much, like, you just can't have them turning the ball over like 3-4 times a game, whatever it may be. So I hope it's a sudden like change in like practice or wherever it needs to be addressed, just to make sure like your guys who are running the offense and setting up the flow are really just making it more of an intentional point to keep the ball in their hands, and maybe just telling Jalen Duren or Stu or whoever it is, like, just to not try and do too much. Like, it kind of seems like has been happening as of late.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, I thought that the Jalen Duren experiment with him initiating more offense, it was all fine and good when Cade was injured, operating under the assumption that it was going to end when Cade got back, and it hasn't. So, you know, I think we do, I'd like to add, you know, that we should probably zoom out just a little bit on this issue as well, because you look at a guy like Malachi Flynn, who had those two turnovers, which were, in my opinion, pretty unacceptable, but he did have two steals. Okay, so I guess in the grand scheme of things, while it's not one-to-one, he at least made some of them back. Asar Thompson, he didn't have a turnover, but he had five stocks. You know, that's steals and blocks all put together. He had a great defensive game. Cade even had a steal that night against the Pacers. Jalen Duren didn't have a single steal or a single block. And actually, I'm looking now, James Wiseman only had one block that whole night as well. So if you're going, and he did have a turnover. So if you're going to have your front court players turning the ball over, but not at least in some capacity getting a portion of those possessions back on the other end, it's a, you know, it hits you twice. Not only are you giving up possessions, but you're giving up points. You're giving up extra possessions because you're not getting it back. And I mean, if Durant's going to keep handling the ball like this, he's going to need to pick up that end as well. Otherwise, you know, there's really no option. He really needs to just stop dribbling the ball so much.
Yeah. And I feel like it's just more like, it's more concerning when it happens against a team like Indiana, who isn't a good defensive team. Like, it sort of just shows me that those turnovers, I mean, you saw it, like, were really just kind of careless. And I mean, Indiana's a very good team offensively, so it just let them get the ball out quick, and they had like a ton of fast break points. So it was just easy buckets, which led to Detroit being down close to 30 points at the half. And although they did have a better second half and cut into that lead, like that's just a insurmountable deficit to be able to overcome.
And with the Pacers specifically, I believe there was a point late in the first half where the Pacers had double-digit fast break points. The Pistons had zero. And that's because not only are the Pacers making all of these shots, because they're a fantastic offensive team. They're averaging almost 130 points per game as a team. They're a great offensive squad. But you're not taking the ball away from them. And if you're not taking the ball away from them, you're not getting these transition opportunities. You know, so it's especially noticeable in this case when you as a team for 48 minutes of basketball can only get six steals and four blocks. You got to find ways to take the ball away from these guys. Otherwise, they're putting it in the hoop. We saw it. Mm-hmm. They're that good. So you got to find another way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And it's also like, I don't want to add more like salt into the wound, but like Indiana just hosted the whole All-Star weekend. Like the Pistons, other than Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren, like ideally had some time off. I mean, maybe there's something to say like, some of the Indiana guys were able to stay in the groove and the Pistons weren't really like ready to come back. But man, just like that whole weekend too, like I just would have expected a different showing, especially after they put up a couple stinkers, like heading into the All-Star break too.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Before we get into some questions here, I want to ask you one thing about Cade Cunningham's game. And this is something that we've both noticed here since he's returned from injury. But against the Pacers, he didn't shoot a single free throw. And this has been more or less the case going back since he returned from that knee strain that he missed a couple weeks with. So my question to you is, specifically in this Pacers game, what did you see that's kind of leading to this? Like, is he, in your opinion, not attacking the rim as strongly? Is he settling for more elbow jumpers, maybe? You know, is there something practical that's been going on that you've been able to identify that's kind of leading to this, I guess, return of an issue that he more or less fixed?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely did. Like, he did sort of, I don't want to say, like, settled for mid-range jumpers, but, like, he definitely was like going to that, and like his mid-range game is so good, so you can't really like fault him for that. I think there may be a bit of a degree to it of maybe not being as aggressive as he was before the injury. It's not like a huge concern. I know there were also reports that he wasn't 100%, not really looking too much into that, but maybe that is adding a little bit to it as well. How he's being officiated also is a bit of a degree to it, like, because he is still getting to the hoop, he's just like not getting calls. And one thing we've talked about before is just like the way he plays and like tries to create space from defenders, which like definitely just like adds to his game. Like, it sort of does hinder his ability to get to the line. So hopefully he can like hunt that contact and get to the line. Cause yeah, I mean, it's crazy. He put up 21 shots and didn't shoot a single free throw. So hopefully it's something that'll get better over time, but it's sort of confusing right now.
Yeah. You know, it really is. And it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. I can remember thinking this quite a bit back in his rookie season, right? Where there's specifically a game against Denver. I think he scored maybe 33 points, zero free throws, and he did it really efficiently. And you're just sitting back like, wow, how did he do that? That's incredibly difficult to do. So it's impressive. But at the same time, like, you need to get to the free throw line. You're not going to be hot that like that every single night. So I do think it's something to worry about again. And that he fixed it and now it's kind of come back. Maybe that's a good sign. You know, maybe this is just kind of a ramping back up thing after the injury. The one thing I have noticed, and I'm curious if you've noticed this too, is I'm not sure that he's attacking the middle of the lane as often. you know, he seems to be kind of getting, you know, trying to go more towards the block more so than literally right to the front of the rim. And if he's going towards the middle, he's pulling up for that elbow jumper more often than not now. And that wasn't necessarily something that he was doing as often earlier on in the season when we were seeing him, you know, get 6, 7, 8 free throws a game there for that stretch, you know, when he was really hot. And I think he had multiple 40-point games in that stretch as well. He did it once against Indiana. It was near the end of the game. It was his little fast break dunk where he just gave a little in and out, attacked the middle, and dunked the ball. And they didn't care because the game was over. But, you know, if you think back to like that Hawks game where he scored over 40 points, right? He had a poster dunk on Trae Young doing the exact same thing just in the half court. We're not seeing him get to the front of the rim as often. And I wonder if maybe that's leading to more, you know, fading away from the hoop while you're taking the layup, because you're just trying to go to the block and extend out instead of go strong right up the center. I don't know if that's absolutely, you know, the problem, if that's the one thing to fix if this whole thing goes away, but I'm curious if you've seen some of the same thing as well since he's returned from his knee injury.
Yeah, you brought up that dunk, and that was the play I immediately thought of. Excuse me. And we've seen those a few times over the past few games. Like, honestly, I think like it might just be he's driving straight to the bucket when he sees the space, like sees a lane, and if it's clogged, like he's just doing something else. So it's like a weird thing to debate, because I feel like it's sort of like him making the right read and not like going into a bunch of traffic and trying to put up a low percentage shot. And I also like his mid-range game. Like, yeah, he's definitely been living at the elbow, trying to get to the baseline for like turnaround jumpers. So yeah, I mean, I hope we see a little more aggression of just like trying to make things happen directly at the bucket, because we have seen it. We know he can do it. We know he can make some explosions there. It just doesn't seem to be like as frequent that would maybe lend to getting to the line more.
You bringing up making the right read when the paint's kind of clogged makes me think a little bit of the spacing issues we've really started to see with Asar Thompson and Jalen Duren. So thank you for reminding me of that. I'm sure we're going to get into more rotation stuff later on as the show progresses. But let's dive into some questions. This first one here is from JMax760 in the DBB comments. We appreciate you. Thank you for this question. And, you know, just ahead of time, thank you for everyone that pre-submitted your question. You could always do that at the DBB article that Blake posts weekly, or just go ahead and message us on Twitter as well. We're both pretty accessible, so we'll get them in. We'll obviously try and hit as many as we can. So JMac asks, what do each of the core four need to develop to make this team a perennial playoff team? And is a fully realized core four, you know, this core four being Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Asar Thompson, and Jalen Duren, talented enough to make those types of runs?
Yeah, I think whether this core together is talented enough is like the big question, really. And that's what this team should be trying to figure out for the rest of the season. I mean, if you want to look at guys individually, I think we can look at Jalen Duren trying to improve as a defender, Asar trying to improve offensively. Like, I don't think Asar is a total like loss on the offensive end. It's just the shot needs to come around. So you can look at little individual things like that that can hopefully improve the rest of the season and into the off season. And if those things do happen, like, who knows how good they can be. I don't know if it's good enough to make them a top four team in the East or whatever we're gonna lend them, whatever their ceiling could be. So I think that's the big question that needs to be figured out. And I mean, if the front office doesn't believe in it, like, I know those four guys were quote unquote untouchable at the trade deadline. Like, maybe there is one you move on from for someone who can better help this team. So I don't know. That's really like just the big question for this team on, is the core they have right now good enough, or do they need to like rebuild the rebuild in a sense?
I got a follow-up question for you on that, actually. Do you think that that question, you know, is it more important that Cade Cunningham kind of makes that leap to superstar for this core four to be, quote unquote, you know, good enough to make a deep playoff run? Or do you think you need more out of, you know, Ivy and Asar and Durant specifically, and Cade can more or less, you know, stay where he's at, but just become more efficient because he already is a very good player. And I do truly believe that if this team was any better, he would have been at least considered for some All-Star votes. But I mean, you look at a guy in 30 minutes, he was 13 of 21 from the floor, 4 of 9 from 3, 30 points, 1 steal, 5 rebounds, 8 assists. If he just adds some free throws to that, you've got one heck of a night from your number one player. So do you think you need more, you know, Luka Doncic-esque level out of Cade, or would you be focusing more on the other three and trying to get them to level up specifically?
Yeah, I mean, personally right now, like, I don't think Cade is the problem. Some improvements we want to see in his game? Yes, but I think if Cade is, like, literally doing what he's doing right now on a team that is in the playoff discussion, like, I think he should be an all-star. Like, not saying he should be an all-star starter, but definitely like should be in that conversation. So I do think, and also like Asar Thompson is like more raw. He's just a rookie. So I think as he gets better, it like, I think that can open up more doors for the team as opposed to Cade doing more. We've already seen that he has the ability to like pop off on any given night like he did against Atlanta, and he still put up 30 points in a game that the Pistons were never really in. So for me, it's the other guys. Yes, do you want to see Cade do different things, like get to the line more? Of course, but I don't necessarily think he is, like, his development or getting better is like a top issue for the team right now. Like, there's a ton of other stuff to worry about. Curious what you have to think though as well.
You know, I think you're probably right, honestly. With Cade, a lot of the things that you would say he needs to improve, right? You know, the free throws, some of the efficiency numbers, which he's already been improving, you know, and consistency, because, you know, every now and then he's got an off night against very, very good teams with very, very good defenses, which is understandable. This is basically his second year in the league, and every defense he's playing slants entirely towards him. But when a good defense does it, it's kind of a different animal. So, you know, with him, you're kind of just ironing out those rough edges. He's already very close to being a very incredible player for the Pistons, and he's already a very good one. So I do think that if you could really get Ivy to take a leap and Asar to be that legitimate tool guy that does just a little bit of everything. And, you know, if Jalen Duren could figure out how to really block some shots and be a force on weak side down low, I do think those would probably be more important to having a team make a deep playoff run rather than just getting in. If the question was just, you know, be the eighth seed, I think if you could iron out all of Cade's rough edges, you're probably going to be fine. But anything further than that, I agree with you. I think you probably want to focus on the other three guys and upgrading all of their weaknesses, shoring up them that way. Let's get into this one here from Harry Moroz in our YouTube comments. He says, how many players in your potential top five for the Pistons draft prospects this offseason, do you think would be a starter next season?
Yeah, I think this, I mean, across the league, this is an interesting one in like a draft class that is sort of widely labeled as, I mean, not as good as ones we've seen in the past. So just thinking of some of these guys like in the top five, Zachary Risache, Alex Sarr, Nikola Topic, Cody Williams. That's a pretty like firm top four for me right now. And then five, it gets a little open. Like there's Matis Buzelis, Jacoby Walter, Ron Holland, whoever you want to put in that spot. I think like a couple of those guys, and specifically the wings, like Reese Ache and Williams, I think could be a starter next year for the Pistons just because they fill a need. Like, but say they want to go with like Alex Sarr, who might be the best talent in this draft. Like, we don't know how he would fit next to Jalen Duren. Like, they're both fives. So I think if they end up with a wing, I think they could definitely start. So I guess I'd say maybe two, depending on fit. And then like, as you get to sort of that five range, like there's guys that are still developing, like have a bunch of questions. Like, I mean, all of them do at this point, but I think overall, if you end up with like a wing who can shoot the ball and play a little bit of defense, like really for any rookie, if they can play defense, they can probably play pretty close to immediately. So if they get a guy like that, I can see them starting. But with this class overall, I think it's very fluid and a ton of unknowns right now.
I'm going to be a little bit more negative than you, though you being our draft expert here, being a little bit higher on some of these guys, I think is probably a good sign for me. So I'm excited by that. But to me right now, and I'm pretty early in my process of watching these guys, admittedly. All right. So I think Alex Sarr is really the only guy that would come in and start day one. And I don't think he would start at the four. So I think if they get the number one pick, and they pick Alex Sarr, Jalen Duren's got to be on the move. They don't work together, and I kind of would probably pick Sarr and keep him long-term as compared to Duren, just because of the defensive potential. But we don't need to get too much into all of that. So I think Sarr's definitely a starter. Reese Ache and Williams, I really like. I don't think they're good enough to kick Fontecchio out of that, you know, combo 3-4 position, especially with how good of a shooter off the catch and off ball player Fontecchio is. So I would say those two are probably bench assets. You draft them, you're playing them high minutes, you know, 20, 25 a night off the bench, probably next to Asar Thompson, and you've signed a player in free agency or made a trade for a guy that's either starting at the three, which shifts Fontecchio up to the four, or, you know, primary would play the four, which keeps Fontecchio at the three. So, yeah, it's kind of not a fantastic top five for immediate starters and high-level star potential. But I do think there are a lot of good players in this draft. You know, maybe that would be good. Let's talk on that really quickly right now. There's obviously a lot of discussion about this draft not being as strong as it's been in the past years. What is your analysis of, you know, just the talent in the draft? Obviously, it seems that there's not that high level, you know, superstar guy, but at the same time, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but is there not quite a bit of depth and, you know, good potential NBA players for a good long time?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys who are like intriguing for sure. And that's like one thing as I've been watching these guys and like consuming some draft coverage, like I've heard that too. Like there might be the top end star level talent, but it is a pretty deep class and there's a lot of interesting names. The Pistons, after their top five pick now don't have one until the 50s. But if there's someone they like, maybe they try to move into the back end of the first round or get like a top pick in the second round. So there are a lot of names that are interesting, and I guess that helps really like wherever you are drafting. And especially like, I think the Pistons are in a different situation. Like you ideally want someone that's going to immediately come in and be able to contribute. But some of those teams that are contenders, like might get some very good NBA players, like what the Heat did with Jaime Jaquez towards like I think 18 or whatever he was drafted at. Like I think we could see a lot of things like that. Teams that are contending, adding rotational pieces that we see make an immediate impact. So yeah, while like the interesting question is, let's say Alex Saar is the top talent in this draft, like where would he go in last year's draft or the one before? Like, that's what I'm sort of trying to figure out in my mind. But overall, like, there are a ton of good players. There are some upside swings, some more proven guys that have been in college for a few years that are NBA players. And like, I still think with 53 or whatever that pick is that the Pistons now have, they could potentially get a piece that is at least interesting.
All right, so we're going to touch on this one quickly. I don't have a great answer for it, but I just wanted to get it out of the way. Because Rich Banks, we see you in the comments. Appreciate you adding your thoughts here. But this is the wrong one. The question was, have the Lions, Pistons, Red Wings, and Tigers all been good simultaneously? And my answer is, I don't think so. The issue for me is I really don't follow the Red Wings. So I don't know, but the Lions were previously good in the 90s. The Pistons, that was the Grant Hill era. They had a couple years. And I think the Tigers were more or less okay around that time. You know, am I forgetting something? If you don't know, that's okay.
I don't remember. Like, I was like, what immediately jumped out to me is sort of that stretch when like the Pistons 04 team and like the Tigers were pretty good. But I think at that point, like Lions, the Red Wings were bad. Yeah, the Red Wings were trending down and the Lions were not good. So, yeah, not that I can remember in my lifetime, unfortunately.
Our guy Harry coming in clutch, he just says no. So, you know what? We trust your expertise. But thank you for that question. That was a fun little sideshow. So this one is from at Josh Kettlewell on Twitter. He asked, does Asar have to start for the rest of the season, or would starting Grimes and Fontecchio help evaluate Cade and Ivy more effectively for the rest of the season? What is more important to you to evaluate with this, the core four in general, or if Cade and, you know, I guess as well, Ivy can be, you know, the guys, you know, the centerpieces of a rebuild?
Yeah, I don't think Asar has to start, but like, I don't know if that will necessarily be the case once Grimes is back. So I'm interested to see what that starting five looks like when both Grimes and Isaiah Stewart are back. But overall, I don't think Asar has to start. I think it might do some good for him to come off the bench and like stagger him in a bit with the starting group. And Grimes probably like brings some things, depending on how he's shooting the ball, that you're not getting from Asar. And we don't know, like, that's what we've been clamoring for, like hoping you can just enable the rest of the starting group by putting someone who's at least not a non-shooter on the floor. Ideally, like, our theory that we've been talking about, putting guys like Quentin Grimes and Fontecchio on the floor next to Cade and Ivy should only help them space the floor a little bit more. Especially if the other guy you have on the court is Jalen Duren at that time. So in short, I don't think he has to start. And then what's more important to evaluate the core four or if Cade's the guy? Unfortunately, I think to know if like Cade is the guy, like, we sort of need to see him play on a team that's at least not historically bad. Like, I think that's a huge thing of importance this season, but I just don't know if we're going to get an answer to it. And then the rest of the core's development, like Asar as a shooter, developing his offensive game a little bit more, Jalen Duren defensively, I don't really know if we're going to get those answers either the rest of the season. But if there was something to like look at now for me, I would probably lean a bit towards the core four. Because like Wes, like you were saying, if there's any sliver of doubt that they're not going to do it, and say like an Alex Saar comes in, like, do you part ways with Duren? Like, I think it's important to know who on this team is going to be here for the long haul, or who they'd potentially be willing to give up.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially with, you know, which is more important to evaluate, because honestly, at this point, I think you could pretty confidently say that Cade is at least the guy to build around whether he's definitively a guy that, you know, can one day bring a championship back to the city of Detroit, we obviously do not have that answer yet. But we're not going to find that out the rest of this season either. He's played so well over stretches this season that I think it's fairly solidified that that's your guy. He's going to be the core of the rebuild. He's proven the pick right. Like, that's the guy. You're building around Cade. So everything should be set up for him to succeed. And now the question with the rest of the core is, can they help him? You know, can they help space the floor to maximize his driving lanes while also provide other things? You know, Ivy being kind of an isolation demon, Sar being a utility man, Durin is a great lob threat, maybe a good secondary passer in the short role, things like that that can help augment Cade's game and lift the floor of the team up. As for Sar starting the rest of the season, I mean, I'll go even stronger than what you said. I don't think he should. Like, I think the best situation for him is to be off the bench next to a big like Isaiah Stewart, or hopefully Mike Muscala, if Isaiah Stewart's going to start, that can shoot. Because if you can get Sar in a situation where he's the only bad shooter out on the floor, it opens up a lot of things for him as well. And not just on the ball for him, not just rip and go situations off the catch, off spot ups. It lets you do some handoff actions with him. It lets you do even some ball screen stuff because the floor is going to be so spread out, which we want. We want him to develop some on ball skills. That was, you know, a big selling point of his coming in from the draft. So it lets you do that. It lets him really excel as a cutter. It makes those reads simpler for him. Everything's not constricted into the paint when he'd be out there if he's the only bad shooter. So it makes the read a little bit easier. And he's already a pretty good cutter. So, you know, with a rookie, just getting him those reps, seeing it more, that would be really helpful. So even for just Sar Thompson, the best situation for him, in my opinion, is off the bench, where he's going to be playing primarily with a good bit of shooters. Now, who starts in his place? I don't think it has to be Quentin Grimes. It could be Troy Brown. All right. All you need is somebody that can be a good defender and a pretty good shooter. So if Quentin Grimes is too small, he's only 6'4 or 6'5, somewhere in that range, depending on where you're finding his height listing. So if that's too small, right, on the wing, and you're not necessarily comfortable bumping Cade up to the three defensively, which they've already been doing anyway, but let's say you're not comfortable with it, well, you could start Troy Brown, who's shooting close to 40% on the season. He's a good defender, and he's got more size. So it doesn't have to be Quentin Grimes. I believe James Edwards III has mentioned previously that, you know, long-term, if Grimes can be, you know, that Alec Burks replacement for this team, that's a win, especially with the defense he can provide off the bench. So, you know, fine. If that's the role you're going to put him in, have him take Shake Milton's place in the rotation, play him more, obviously, off the bench, and elevate Troy Brown. So you still get that shooting in the starting lineup. That does space the floor for Cade and Ivy and Durin, because, you know, Ivy's pretty streaky as a three-point shooter. He's been better this season, but he's still streaky. Cade is an all right shooter at this point in his career, but he's not, you know, lighting any nets on fire. So it really hurts that starting group. You even saw it in the first quarter against the Pacers. Whoever was guarding Sar Thompson, it didn't matter if it was Siakam or Turner or Halliburton, they sagged off, they ignored him, and he was just stuck in the corner, because when your defender's not in, like, paying absolutely no attention to you, and you have a big in the middle of the lane, you cannot back cut. Well, you can, but it's a lot harder. I shouldn't say that you can't. You can. It just becomes a lot harder. And we talked about it last week. That's not okay to expect a rookie to know how to have that skill, to know how to time that well. So I think for all parties involved, Sar Thompson off the bench and replacing him with a shooter is just, it's best for both. You're kind of getting the best of both worlds, right? You get to evaluate Cade more. You get to see Jaden Ivey in space and Jalen Duren in space. And then you get to see Sar Thompson with the ball in his hands. You get to see him with shooters, so there's less pressure. Like, it's a win for all four of them to me. Am I missing something, or do you agree?
No, I agree. And I was also going to say, like, I think it would really benefit Ausar Thompson to play alongside a floor spacing big. Like, Mike Muscala didn't play last night, but a guy that is, if it's Mike Muscala or not, like someone in a similar role, like that would really help him. I'm not saying that we need to craft our rotations fully around the lack of shooting that it is currently happening for Ausar Thompson, but like you brought up with the defense, I think I noticed one play like Andrew Nembhard was guarding him and he was sort of providing help in the paint and the ball was swung around to Ausar in the corner and it looked like Nembhard like went to go up and check him, but then he was kind of like, oh, like I don't really like need to. So you just want to like avoid situations like that. And I think if you're gonna have like a big like Mike Muscala, someone like him off the bench who can at least play around the perimeter, I think that will really do wonders for Ausar Thompson's game overall.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was actually something that you brought up, Blake, early on in the season when we were seeing the Cade Cunningham, Killian Hayes, Ausar Thompson, Jalen Duren foursome that was playing, and it was just kind of killing the spacing. But you brought up how, especially with young guards, when we were talking about Cade Cunningham, when you drive and you kick the ball out to a guy that can't shoot, and the defense, they don't care. They're playing you in the paint. You kick it out to the wide open guy. And it like clanks off the rim, or in Ausar Thompson and Killian Hayes' case, occasionally just misses the entire rim, air ball completely. Like that is so discouraging as a young guard. So for Cade, he obviously got past this and he's still passing the ball. He had eight assists against the Pacers. He's almost at eight assists on average for the season. So he's fine. It ended up not being a concern at all. But you're trying to instill these good habits in these young players. So for Jaden Ivey, I believe on the play that you brought up, I believe he was the one that drove baseline, kicked it across to Ausar in the opposite corner after the defense collapsed, and he airballed the three. Like that's not what you want to see when you're trying to develop these young guards to make the right plays, to not turn the ball over, just take what's in front of them, right? Well, if they do that and it turns into a really bad looking shot, well, your worst case scenario is they're not going to do that a lot anymore. At least when those guys are on the floor. So, yeah, it's just not a good situation with the lack of spacing that Ausar and Duren, because it's not just Ausar. If Duren could somehow magically shoot 35% from three on good volume, this problem goes away. It's fixed. So it's not just Ausar, but he's the only one attempting threes. He went 0 for 2. So we're kind of picking on him a little bit.
Yeah, well, it also just like is a confidence killer too when like you're not
Yep.
getting attention and you still aren't seeing like the ball go through or even like hit the rim. And I think shooting is a lot like you need to have confidence in your shot and what you can do. And I think that's a real challenge for a lot of like rookies as well as like guys that are coming into the league. So I think putting Ausar just in a situation that maximizes the player he is, hopefully it lends itself to just more offensively or like the shot coming along. Because what we're seeing right now, like how he's being played, isn't working. So I feel like you have to try something different.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, obviously. So let's jump into this next one here from Rames in the DBB comments. He wants to talk about Quentin Grimes. He says, what does Quentin Grimes need to do to be considered a part of this team for the next couple of years? So like kind of a core piece, but obviously not quite the core four. Does he just need to play like he did in his second year? Or does he need to evolve into maybe a higher level playmaker or more of a shot creator? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I initially my gut is telling me like sort of what he did in year two. I know the shot hasn't looked as good this year, so hopefully if the shot comes along once he starts playing for the Pistons, it sort of just solves problems. I don't know, like of course you want him to be a tertiary playmaker and be able to find his own shot if he needs to, but I don't know if that's ever going to be his like role on this team. Like if he's seen as a long-term starter, then in theory he'll be playing next to like Cade and Jaden Ivey, who are your primary and secondary ball handlers and playmakers. So I don't know if that needs to be a huge part of Quentin Grimes' game. Like, overall, I think it's continuing to play like good defense and then have the shot come along. Like, just be really that like 3-and-D type player that we've all known that this team needs and like wanted so badly. And hopefully it's as simple as like shooting more efficiently once he's back on the floor.
What do you think about the value of this trade for Bojan and Burks to be exchanged for Quentin Grimes? Do you think that might play a part in, you know, I guess the way that we need to evaluate the player that Grimes eventually becomes? And I ask that because they traded away two veteran guys, older guys, that, you know, they probably weren't going to get much more than a player like Quentin Grimes, who's still young, has potential, and is on his rookie deal. And if they even got that first round pick for Bojan, right, it's a late first round pick, and you're hoping to get someone like Quentin Grimes is currently. So do you think that, you know, I guess for this to have been a win as a trade, that Grimes needs to somehow find a level similar to that of Bojan Bogdanović as a scorer? Or do you think if he's just Alec Burks with some really good defense for the next, you know, 5 or so years for this Pistons group, do you think that would be a worthwhile investment, I guess I should say?
I do. And I, like, it just goes, like, long-term for me if he's going to be a long-term starter for this group. I mean, maybe he ends up coming off the bench and playing as like a six man and high volume minutes, but I really do see him as that, like, I don't know, just like sort of a piece that like rounds together a starting five. Like, is he ever going to be your first, second, or maybe even third option? Like, maybe not, but I feel like that's okay if he can at least like shoot the ball and play defense. I know we all kind of were taking it back when Bojan was included in the deal. Like, we've seen what Bojan can do on the floor. Like, I don't really think Grimes will ever be the offensive player that Bojan is, but I think that's okay if he fits more of the timeline of this group and addresses some of the needs that were so glaring. I get that it's kind of like tough to swallow because you give up two high level veterans, and the Knicks were sort of deemed as the big winners of the trade deadline, like making that move and only giving up Grimes and not even like sending us that first round pick back. But I think big picture, if he can be someone who just like rounds out our starting five, I think it's a win, or at least like a beneficial trade for the Pistons.
Well, and every team needs 3-and-D players, right? I mean, we've talked at length this season before the trade deadline that this Pistons team specifically lacks 3-and-D players. So, I mean, yeah, to exchange two 3-no-D players and get a guy in Grimes who has a lot of potential as a wing who can shoot the three and is already proven to be a very good defender, I'm 100% with you. I think even if it's just, you know, just Alec Burks with very good and flexible defensive potential and talent, that's a win. That's a really good player. That's a player that almost every single other team in the league is searching for, and the Pistons maybe just found one. So, yeah, I agree. I think the value, if Grimes can become a really solid and very good 3-and-D player, whether that's off the bench or as a starter, yeah, I do think that's a win. So let's hit on this one. I think this will probably be our last one for the day. This is from the Big Cheese in the comment section here. He says, if the Pistons simply don't play Wiseman, Malachi Flynn, or Shake Milton, and then just play Mike Muscala instead, so I believe this would take you down to about an 8-man rotation, would the Pistons be better or worse off? Would it potentially slow down the sinking ship until more help arrives in the offseason? So this kind of felt inevitable. This has been a big discussion online after that Pacers game. They played 11 players in the first quarter while they were getting blown out, and not all of those players were guys many expected to be getting minutes after the trade deadline. So what do you think about the rotation? What do you think about maybe trimming it down? Where are you at right now as we head into the last stretch of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall it just needs to be trimmed down, and these three guys seem like the right ones. And when the Pistons made the trade with Washington that brought in Muscala, like, it's sort of, even though he's not like a guy that's going to come in and change everything and like right the ship, it helped. They started playing more competitive and got a couple wins. So like I said earlier, just like a player like Muscala, his archetype that allows a team to play five out and opens the door for other players like Asar Thompson, I don't know if it'll make the team magically fine. Like, I don't really think anything could this season, at least, but I think it'll definitely improve the product on the floor overall, and just like improves what the rest of your guys who are in the rotation and should continue to be in the rotation, like, it just unlocks their game, I guess, just puts them in the best situation possible in a really bad situation. It, like, I would think that's where Monty Williams would go. I think James Edwards reported that Sasser had like a little bit of a banged up knee, which is why he didn't play much in the second half. So hopefully that's what it is. But yeah, like, it gives guys like Sasser more minutes and allows like the rest of your core to play more time, and hopefully it just results in a better product on the floor. So if I was the coach, like, that's what I would do, but who knows what we're going to see.
Yeah, I would trim it down too. And I want to make sure that we're clear. I mean, with the Sasser thing in particular, when he fell, I forget who was guarding him, but he fell down dribbling to his right on the wing. The refs called a kickball, even though it looked like he kind of got tripped. And he looked like he hit his knee on the ground. So that seemed like why he really didn't play too much in the second half. That being said, Malachi Flynn did get first quarter minutes. So it's not like if Sasser didn't get hurt, Flynn would not have played close to 10 minutes. He played 11. You know, that was probably what he was going to get anyway. The question is who that was going to be coming at the expense of. It may not have been Sasser, who only played 10. It may have been a guy like Shake Milton, who saw more second half minutes than first half minutes. But point being, 11-man rotation going 11 deep was assuredly what Monty Williams had planned to do against the Indiana Pacers. And I want to put it this way to you, and then just kind of get your thoughts right away from it. You know, I'm looking at the guys that played: Fontecchio, Thompson, Duren, Cunningham, Ivy, Troy Brown Jr., James Wiseman, Malachi Flynn, Evan Fournier, Shake Milton, and Marcus Sasser. I see maybe eight guys that would be playing in other teams' rotations somewhere pretty solidly. Yeah. And, you know, people, you know, maybe you'll kill me for this, but I do think Fournier probably plays more places than he doesn't. I've actually been pleasantly surprised with how he's shot the ball. He's had a little bit more juice than I expected. So that may have just been a Knicks thing, and we know how Thibodeau is with defense. And if you can't play slightly, you're not getting to play at all. So I do think Fournier probably plays. So that's eight. You know, Flynn, we know, wasn't getting minutes on two different teams. Wiseman's not getting backup minutes anywhere else. He got 18 minutes. Mike Muscala wasn't playing at all for the Brooklyn Nets when the Pistons traded for him. And you know, we've got Pistons fans that are upset he wasn't getting minutes against the Pacers. I mean, it just seems like a difficult situation that they're in right now. Even though they added guys over the deadline that do play real basketball. You know, Troy Brown would be playing in most places. Shake Milton even probably plays most places. But right now you've got Quentin Grimes injured and Isaiah Stewart suspended. So that's two. And I think we were being generous when we said they had 10 or 11 guys after that trade deadline review episode that were definitely rotation to guys elsewhere in the league. So right now they're down to eight. And he still went 11 deep.
Yeah, you just need to, like, you have to hope. I feel like the only thing that you can take from it, and this is really just me trying to make sense of a situation that you probably can't even make sense of, but you have to hope that the absence of Grimes and Isaiah Stewart sort of threw things off. I think the plan was for Stewart to return after the All-Star break, and his suspension wasn't handed down until yesterday. So maybe the plan was for Stewart to play. So you have to hope that that sort of went into the weird and just like rotations that you can't really make sense of. I think when guys like we acquired Malachi Flynn, Evan Fournier, and like Shake, like I wasn't sure that those guys were going to play, and they are. So I've said it before at different points of the season, like I'm interested to see once this team is like fully healthy, what the lineups and different rotations look like. But the only like constant has just been being confused. So like, I can't really even make sense of it at this point.
That is exactly what I was going to say. Cause it's not even like, I'm not even really upset by it. Cause it seems like, you know, maybe at some level he's just Monty Williams, that is just trying to get a good grasp of all of the guys he has on the roster in some solid NBA minutes. And to some extent, I do understand that, but you know, that Pacers game, for example, and this is not the only time this has been true this season, they played 11 guys. Every single one of them played more than 10 minutes, every single one of them. And, and to be clear too, this was a game where starters played into garbage time, which is again, something that we've seen most of this season. And for what it's worth, is something I do truly agree with, because these are young guys, they're starters, and they made this mess. They will finish it out. You know, they haven't earned the right to sit down and get the rest. They kind of created the problem. You're going to sit in it, you know, kind of like the kid, you make them sit in the spilled applesauce, right? they can stay with it. So I get that. But my point is that the starters played late into the fourth quarter, and you still had six more guys off the bench that played over 10 minutes, which means that wasn't garbage time. That was real, quote unquote, real minutes in first, second, and third quarter, where, I mean, even for a portion of it, they were just all out there alone without a single, you know, one of the starters out there with them. It's just confusing. I'm not sure what to make of it as of right now. I'm confused. That was a perfect word for it.
Yeah, and it's just like the minutes that you're talking about and the volume of them is, you like, those are just minutes you can distribute elsewhere. And yeah, like Coffee mentions, it's been like garbage time as well. So that it, like getting blown out, like being down by 30 points going into halftime doesn't help. And yeah, like you're gonna, like Monty Williams is gonna go to the end of his bench at some points like that. But like you were talking about, like going 11 guys into the 11 guys deep in the first quarter, we've seen that numerous times this year. And like one of them, I think, like Marcus Sasser was the 11th guy to check in, which is your rookie point guard who's looked good. Like I feel like that's just not acceptable. So overall, it doesn't make sense. Like I'm confused, you're confused. I feel like we're all confused. Hopefully once like Stewart and Grimes are back, we can at least make a little bit more sense of it.
And I don't want to end this podcast on like a super, super negative note. So I'm just going to add this as well. Like the bench guys, if you put it in a vacuum, you know, you look at Evan Fournier against the Pacers, 18 minutes. He was 3-for-4 from three. He had 4 rebounds. And 10 points. Like, honestly, that is a solid night from a low-ish minute backup shooting guard.
That's in a solid night where didn't do much overall.
Right, where they didn't do much overall. Like, Troy Brown Jr. has had good nights since coming to the Pistons. James Wiseman recently, since he's been playing over Muscala, like, he had a couple games where he looked pretty good. You know, he's made an impact. Marcus Sasser obviously has looked good. Shake Milton had a game or two where he looked nice. Like, if you take these guys individually and just isolate them from the rest of the roster, they've each shown flashes of decent basketball moments. They've played good stretches, even just as recently as since the All-Star break. I would say each one of these guys has had a halfway decent game. So it's not necessarily a question of, you know, gosh, why are all of these two-way guys playing minutes? It's more of just like just pick some of them. Don't do all of them. You know, there's a rotation here. There are guys that are fighting to earn minutes, and they're making their own cases. They are making arguments for it, and it's only going to get more difficult when Quentin Grimes comes back and when Isaiah Stewart comes back, because those are guys you're definitely playing pretty decent minute loads. So I guess it's refreshing in some sense that early on in the season we were like, wow, they've got nobody. They've got maybe six guys that you can trust. And now they do have players that you can kind of trust, and they're trying to prove themselves and all that. It's just, I don't know, make some choices here. Don't play all 11, 12, 13 of them.
Yeah, 100%. You just have to hope it gets tightened up. And from everything that we've seen, like, it's supposedly coming. So I don't know. Like, you have to chalk it up to new roster, having some guys out. If you can chalk it up to anything, not trying to make excuses for it, but hopefully at least once Stu and Grimes are back, then we'll see what things look like, and hopefully things are tightened up a bit.
Yeah, I agree. It'll if nothing else, it will be interesting to follow here for the rest of the season to see how these rotations shake out once the team gets healthy again. That will be really interesting, especially with, you know, the kind of the up in the air nature of the contracts with Troy Brown and Shake Milton, and even to some extent Evan Fournier. Right? I mean, I don't think that team option's ever going to get picked up, but if he plays well enough and maybe wants to stick around, maybe you decline that and sign him to a minimum. Like, that's on the table. It's all possible. So it's going to be interesting to follow the rest of the season. Guys, we're going to wrap this up after this is published. We're going to get this out on Saturday morning. We apologize for being about a day late. I was out on a business trip, so I was not able to record on Thursday night so that we could get this out to you guys Friday morning as per usual. So we apologize for that. But at the time that this is published, they will be playing the Magic. They'll then play the Knicks and the Bulls, and then we'll be back up and recording for you on our usual time on Thursday, so we can be out on your podcast feeds Friday morning. Blake, this was a fun one. Good discussion. Hopefully we see some competitive basketball this week. You know, I mean, the Magic and the Bulls aren't world beaters. Who knows? Maybe it'll be fun.
Yeah, and hey, we got a revenge game for Evan Fournier and potentially Quentin Grimes as well. So who knows? Who knows what can happen? Yeah, hopefully we see some better performance. But yeah, thank you everyone for joining at sort of last minute with us. We really appreciate all the pre-submitted questions and the activity in the chat. And special thanks, as always, to our guy Sean Corp, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting this show. Shout out to everyone listening and joining us live again for all the great questions and talking points. We'll catch you next week at our normal time, whether on your commute or live with us here on YouTube or Twitter. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you all.